Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 17th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MISD looks at future of two campuses. Trustees to decide whether to convert Lamar to DAEP, letting Charter run south. By Trevor Hawes, editor. The Midland ISD Board of Trustees will consider approving a pair of major changes that could see the closing of two schools, the turnover of an elementary to a charter provider, and the formation of a new disciplinary center. At the board's regular meeting Tuesday, February 17th, MISD staff is set to recommend approval to change Lamar Elementary from a neighborhood school to the new home of the district's Disciplinary Alternative Education Program, DAEP. Since the passage of the Texas Safe Schools Act of 1995, all Texas public school districts are required to provide DAEP, which serves as an alternative education setting for students temporarily removed from their regular instructional settings for disciplinary purposes. At MISD, DAEP is currently split. Elementary students go to Parker Elementary, and secondary students go to the Midland Alternative Program, MAP, campus. MISD staff will ask board members to approve converting Lamar into a K-12 DAEP campus. This decision is driven by historically low enrollment at Lamar Elementary, which has remained a concern over multiple years, and even prompted the district to previously redraw boundary lines to zone more students to the campus, the district said in a statement. Even with the intentional efforts, only 51% of students who are zoned to attend Lamar Elementary have chosen to enroll at the campus, with the remaining students enrolling at other schools. This repurposing will allow all students placed in DAEP to be served at a single, centralized location. Lamar has been operated by charter partner at Third Future Schools for the past 3 years. Staff will ask trustees to approve Third Future to operate South Elementary. Lamar received an F rating, 59 out of 100, in the 2022-23 school year. Third Future took over operations the following year and elevated the rating to a B, 80. For 2024-25, Lamar had a C rating, 74. South Elementary saw marked improvement in 2023-24, rising to a B rating, 87, after receiving a D, 62, the prior year. That mark fell precipitously in 2024-25 when the school received an F rating, 59. Third Future also operates Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Elementary. The campus received C's in 2022-23, 75, and 2023-24, 71, but rocketed to an A, 91, last year. If approved, Third Future would run South Elementary for 3 years. Students who currently attend Lamar can transfer to Sam Houston or South. The attendance zone itself will be dissolved, and non-Third Future campuses that would serve these students are in a 1.5-mile radius of Lamar. As for the MAP campus, MISD staff will recommend the district sell the property. All actions will be taken up as separate items. The next meeting of the MISD Board of Trustees is set for 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, February 17th at the Bowie Fine Arts Auditorium, 805 Elk Avenue. This article is entitled Judge rejects request to block JP candidate. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. Two Midland County candidates for Justice of the Peace Precinct 2 have taken grievances to court regarding alleged ethics violations. According to court documents received by the Midland Reporter-Telegram, the incumbent, Yadi Billick, filed a temporary restraining order against her opponent, Mary Rhonda Eggleston, in the 385th District Court. Billick accused Eggleston of several ethics violations in her initial candidate filing. Billick alleged that Eggleston violated the law when she authorized a campaign expenditure without first selecting a campaign treasurer. Additionally, Billick alleged that Eggleston did not reside in Midland County, according to the address listed on her motor vehicle's registration. Another complaint cited Eggleston for the failure by non-incumbents to use the word "for" on political advertising. On January 30th, the 385th District Court held a hearing for Billick's application for a temporary injunction against Eggleston. Substitute Judge William C. Souter denied the request in its entirety. "Unfortunately, she had to go to this extreme to keep me off the ballot," Eggleston told the Reporter-Telegram in a statement. "Instead of focusing on the negative, I am committed to staying focused on the positive and what I can bring to the office of the Midland County Justice of the Peace Precinct 2 position. As a lifelong resident of Midland County, I believe in the power of constructive leadership and community service." Billick submitted a statement to the Reporter-Telegram, but did not directly address her court request. Rather, she cited a youth diversion program, ethics law, election code compliance, and party affiliation transparency. "My intent has never been about personal opposition or pressure tactics," she said. "It has always been about following the law, upholding ethics, and ensuring voters receive accurate information, all of which are core responsibilities of the Justice Court." This article is entitled "County to Eye Courts, Juneteenth at Meeting." Annex with 55,000 square feet set to open in September. By B. K. Richter, staff writer. The Midland County Commissioner's Court is set to conduct its next meeting at 9 a.m. Tuesday. Here are agenda items that the Midland Reporter-Telegram is watching. County courtrooms. Commissioners plan to discuss and take action on designated courtrooms at the Judge David M. Kobos Midland County Courthouse Annex as alternate courtrooms for Midland County District Courts, County Courts at Law, and County Courts. The 55,000-square-foot facility plans to house the officers and courtrooms for Midland County's Justices of the Peace, four constables, the Warrants Division, and the Medical Examiner. The annex is on schedule to open for business in September. The building is across the street from one of the current JP courts and the county jail, located at 301 South Main Street. Juneteenth. Commissioners will discuss and take action declaring June 19th as a county holiday. Juneteenth, celebrated on June 19th, commemorates the June 19, 1865 announcement that all remaining enslaved African Americans in Texas were free, more than 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. The historic announcement officially marked the end of slavery in the United States and has been recognized as a federal holiday since 2021. Income statement from the Horseshoe. Commissioners are set to discuss and acknowledge the 2025 income statement from the Horseshoe. In a previous meeting, Director Stephen Garcia told commissioners that the Horseshoe hosted 213 events with more than 214,000 attendees. Total revenue was $847,000. Deputy Constable for Precinct 3. During the last Commissioner's Court meeting, commissioners voted 3-2 to add deputy constables to precincts 3 and 4. This action was done after a previous motion in 2024, which had removed a deputy constable and placed him with the Midland County Warrant Services Division. This agenda item is to discuss and take action on the deputy constable for Precinct 3. Purchase of vehicles and upfitting. Commissioners are scheduled to discuss and take action on the purchase of vehicles and upfitting. Upfitting of vehicles is typically the outfitting of vehicles for special equipment, such as sirens, lights, and other equipment utilized by law enforcement agencies. Surplus items. Commissioners will discuss and take action declaring surplus items as salvage. Date change. Commissioners will discuss and take action changing the commissioners' court meeting scheduled for March 3rd to another day. This article is entitled, Early Voting Starts Tuesday for Primaries. 5 sites open for casting ballots ahead of time. 16 available March 3rd. By Trevor Hawes, Editor. Early voting begins Tuesday, February 17th for the primary election, and election day is set for Tuesday, March 3rd. Most local races are uncontested. Though 3 spots for Midland County Commissioner's Court are up for election this year and have multiple Republican candidates. Incumbent Terry Johnson, Karen Hood, and Jay Marquez are all vying for county judge. In the Precinct 4 commissioner race, incumbent Diane Anderson is up against H. Lance Friday and Don Woody Woodward. Precinct 2 Commissioner Jeff Summers is not running for re-election. Brian Carney and Joe Waters are running for the spot. Incumbent Yadi Bellick is seeking another term as Justice of the Peace for Precinct 2. She faces challenger Rhonda Eggleston. There aren't any Democrats seeking office locally. Here's a rundown of where you can vote and the times polling locations are open. Early voting locations. Elections office at County Annex 2110 North A Street, Tuesday, February 17th through Friday, February 20th, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, February 21st, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday, February 22nd, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, February 23rd to Friday, February 27th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Centennial Library, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Tuesday, February 17th through Friday, February 20th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, February 21st, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday, February 22nd, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, February 23rd to Friday, February 27th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Cogdell Learning Center, 201 West Florida Avenue, Tuesday, February 17th through Friday, February 20th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, February 21st, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday, February 22nd, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, February 23rd to Friday, February 27th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Manor Park Allen Hale Community Center, 5323 Sinclair Avenue. Tuesday, February 17th through Friday, February 20th, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, February 21st, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday, February 22nd, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, February 23rd to Friday, February 27th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. United Supermarket, 3317 Midland Drive. Tuesday, February 17th through Friday, February 20th, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, February 21st, from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday, February 22nd, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. And Monday, February 23rd to Friday, February 27th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Election Day Voting. Election Day is Tuesday, March 3rd. Hours at all locations are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Annex Building Auxiliary Courtroom, 2110 North A Street. Centennial Library, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Cogdell Learning Center, 201 West Florida Avenue. Cotton Flat Baptist Church, 6409 State Highway 349. Downtown Library, 301 West Missouri Avenue. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3813 North Midland Drive. Fellowship Community Church, 5206 North Midland Drive. Greenwood Baptist Church, 10908 Farm to Market Road 307. Manor Park Allen Hale Community Center, 5323 Sinclair Avenue. Mid-Cities Community Church, 8700 State Highway 191. MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. Odessa Country Club, 1 Fairway Drive. Orchard Church, 6112 State Highway 349. Presence Church, 901 Midland Drive. Stonegate Fellowship, Building C, 6000 West Wadley Avenue. United Supermarket, 3317 Midland Drive. This article is entitled, Hospital Leader Begiel Joins City Development Corporation Board, by Luke Diaz, staff writer. Abraham Begiel, the Vice President of Facility Services at Midland Memorial Hospital, was recently appointed to the board of the Midland Development Corporation. Following his induction earlier this month, the Reporter-Telegram sat down with him to discuss his background and plans with MDC. Born and raised in San Angelo, Begiel enlisted in the U.S. Air Force at age 18 as a biomedical equipment technician, BMET, and was deployed to Shepherd Air Force Base in Wichita Falls. After leaving the Air Force, but keeping a reservist status, Begiel got his first civilian job as a field engineer with Philips Healthcare, leading him to Midland in 2005, where he decided to make the Tall City his home. He began working for Midland Memorial Hospital in 2011 and is now in an administrative role that has put him in charge of all facilities. For this role, I oversee all of our facility services, such as construction design, maintenance planning, all of our property management and clinics, and then all the support services inside the hospital, Begiel said. And so, as I started to get more involved with the city, as I built more and more facilities, I saw that there was a need for volunteers around the city. I wanted to start to serve the community more, and I just saw that there was a need for me to provide my skill sets in other ways, or just lending a hand. This desire led him to joining Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission, where he served a term from 2022 to 2025, and was chairman of the commission in his final year. He also serves on the board of the Bynum School and does work with Stonegate Fellowship Church's Children's Ministry. With his planning and zoning term expiring, Begiel was drawn to the MDC due to their goal of industry diversification. I'm in the healthcare sector, and it plays a huge part in Midland, but it's one of the few diversified areas in Midland outside of the oil field, Begiel said. I wanted to see how else we could diversify the jobs in Midland, and with MDC, their role is to help diversify other industries, so I wanted to see how I could get involved with that. As a newcomer, Begiel is not looking to pitch any new projects until he fully familiarizes himself with the MDC and establishes a relationship with them and Midland City Council. However, he is also interested in getting involved with ongoing MDC projects, particularly, and true to his Air Force roots, in the aerospace industry. I see that market continuing to grow throughout the United States. And we in Midland seem to have the ability to have more of that because of our current clear airspace and where we geographically lie, Bajil said. We have the ability to be able to partner with more aerospace manufacturers. I think that is an area that we tapped into, and there's a lot more potential that we can do in that area. Like fellow newcomer Hayden Muldrick, Bajil agrees with criticisms of the MDC needing to advertise itself more openly and be transparent on MDC's function as a Type A taxing entity. I think we need to be clear on how, when we're going to invest in a business, how that benefits Midland for one, and also how that falls in alignment with a Type A corporation, Bajil said. I think there's more education needed, and maybe that comes from additional transparency and building up of education. Ensuring that we're transparent with taxpayers, that what we're going to invest in is still in alignment with a Type A corporation. Bajil was sworn in with the other newest board members of MDC at its February meeting. Board members serve 3-year terms and can serve up to 2 consecutive full terms. I'm excited to continue serving the community in this new role and looking forward to learning more about all the interest that the MDC has currently, Bajil said. This article is entitled Idea Public Schools to Hold Student Lottery February 21st for 2026-27 Permian Basin Campuses by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. IDEA Public Schools will host its student lottery for the 2026-27 school year on Saturday, February 21st, announcing the names of students randomly selected for seats at certain campuses in the Permian Basin. The lottery will announce the selection for seats at IDEA Yukon, IDEA Lopez, and IDEA Henry for the 2026-27 school year. We encourage families throughout the Midland and Odessa areas to apply and explore what's possible at IDEA Public Schools, said Annette Macias, Executive Director of IDEA Public Schools in the Permian Basin. Our schools are built around high expectations, strong student support, and a clear, proven pathway to college and career success. Macias added that the lottery is the first step in opening doors for students and families. IDEA Public School currently serves more than 3,000 students in the Permian Basin. A new campus, IDEA Henry Academy and College Preparatory, will open its doors in Midland in August for the 2026-27 school year. In its first year, it will serve students in grades K to 2, 6, and 9 to 12, marking the first graduating class in the Permian Basin. Next year, IDEA Yukon Academy and College Preparatory will add a new grade level to the campus, serving students in grades K to 11. IDEA Lopez Academy and College Preparatory will serve students in grades K to 3 and 6 to 7 this next school year. IDEA Public Schools said that over the last 18 years, it has achieved nearly 100% college acceptance among seniors, while maintaining a college graduation rate 5 times the national average for students from low-income communities. During the lottery process, names will be selected at random by grade level, with spots offered in the order of selection. When the capacity for each grade level is reached, any remaining applications will be assigned a position on the waiting list in a randomized order. Parents and guardians will receive a notification of their preferred method of contact once the lottery is completed. Only applications completed before the February 20th deadline at 11:59 p.m. will be eligible for the student lottery. Applications submitted after the lottery deadline are only granted if seats are available. Applications submitted after the deadline and lottery will be added to the waiting list in order of the date and time of their application. Idea Travis in Midland participates in Midland ISD's application and lottery process, which is found at Apply Midland. To apply, visit www.ideapublicschools.org/apply. This article is entitled MISD to Consider Prayer Period. Administration to Recommend Not Adopting the Option, by Trevor Hawes, editor. A bill giving public school districts the opportunity to require campuses to provide a period of prayer and reading of the Bible or other religious text passed during last year's 89th legislative session. Now, it's up to the Midland ISD Board of Trustees to decide. Now written into the Texas Education Code, the law says school districts must pass a formal resolution and use required wording. Furthermore, participation must be voluntary and a signed consent form is required. The school must ensure prayers and readings are not in the presence or hearing of anyone who has not consented, and they can't occur during instructional time. No prayer or religious reading can happen over the public address system. At its next monthly meeting, the district administration will recommend the board not adopt the school prayer option, according to meeting materials. Instead, the administration points to an already existing district policy and summarized it as follows. Students may include religious expression in their academic work. Such work is evaluated solely on academic standards and is neither penalized nor rewarded based on religious content. The policy also addresses student religious groups and activities. Students may organize and participate in religious groups and activities, including events such as See You at the Pole, before, during, and after school, consistent with other non-curricular student activities. Additionally, regardless of whether the Board of Trustees adopts the policy does not prohibit a student or employee of the district or school from participating in prayer or reading the Bible or other religious text during a period of the school day that is not designated as a period of prayer and reading of the Bible or other religious text, the administration says in meeting materials. Midland ISD provides appropriate avenues for religious expression while preserving instructional time. State Senator Kevin Sparks and Representative Tom Craddock both voted in favor of the bill. The next meeting of the MISD Board of Trustees is set for 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, February 17th at the Bowie Fine Arts Auditorium, 805 Elk Avenue. This article is entitled Permian High Student Arrested After Vaping Stop, Handgun Found, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Odessa. Ector County ISD officials say a student was arrested at Permian High School following an incident between a police officer and a high school student. According to school officials, an ECISD police officer observed a Permian student vaping on school property. The officer stopped the student and then proceeded to confiscate the vaping device. Once the officer began escorting the student to the campus police office, the student allegedly attempted to flee, but was quickly apprehended after a brief chase. During a search in the campus police office, the student was found in possession of a handgun, said ECISD in a press statement. The high school student, identified as a 15-year-old male, is now facing multiple criminal charges, including two third-degree felonies of possession of a weapon, where weapons are prohibited, and possession of a controlled substance. Additionally, the student was charged with a state jail felony for possession of a stolen firearm. Several other minor charges, including the unlawful carry of a firearm and evading arrest, are also listed in the charges against the student. This is a serious incident, and it will be dealt with to the fullest extent of the law, said ECISD. This is the Life Tributes column. Pamela Jean Creek. Pamela Jean Creek, age 71, went to her heavenly home on January 30th. The family will be receiving friends Saturday, February 28th at 10 a.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with a celebration of life memorial service at 11 a.m. with Pastor Tuesday Jacobs as officiant. Burial will immediately follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Funeral services are under the direction of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at stantonfh.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, February 16th. Fawcett, Meta, spar a bit and debate. Early voting begins this week. GOP primary will decide the race. Basin PBS hosted a debate Thursday between incumbent Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett and challenger Sunil Mehta. The sometimes cordial forum featured the candidates sparring a bit over Mehta's lawsuit against the county and the funding of the now-under-construction county courthouse. Fawcett is seeking his second term leading Ector County. Mehta, who has said he is a full-time student, was fired from his job at the Ector County Library last year and is suing the county, alleging he was fired because he filed a public records request and because he alleged illegal hiring practices. He also claims racial and national origin discrimination and inadequate training exist within Ector County as it relates to persons of color, the lawsuit stated. When questioned about the lawsuit, Mehta said it would continue if he wins the judge's seat, but did not go into detail about the lawsuit, instead urging voters to speak to his attorney or read an Odessa American article about the lawsuit. Fawcett said the county judge and others on the commissioner's court do not hire and fire county employees except at department head level, but the Human Resources Department and specific departments make those decisions, but also keep the court informed. Quote, we believe in accountability and what took place at the library. It was a deal with challenging scenarios. He said employees at the library have a difficult job often dealing with homeless patrons and other issues. He said they felt threatened and uncomfortable after Mehta told some not to come into work if he texted them certain code words. Quote, we have 750 employees. The court did not fire him. Disgruntled employees are not always happy and go after taxpayer funds. The county was justified in its actions. End quote. Mehta was agitated following that exchange, accusing Fawcett of giving the okay to fire him to the HR director, who Mehta said should not have been hired. Thursday's forum was moderated by Becky Ferguson of Basin PBS and Pat Canty, publisher of the Odessa American and board president of PBS. Early voting begins this week, and the county judge race will be decided during the GOP primary, as there are no Democratic challengers in November. Mehta mostly disagreed with Fawcett on questions and kept going back to what he called his 20 years of civic duty during his time in the Marine Corps. Fawcett hammered away at the last 3.5 years of his tenure, saying Ector County is now proactive and not reactive to various issues, including roads, water, trash, and law enforcement. Mehta criticized a shortage of law enforcement, saying the county needs a department dedicated to recruiting officers, while Fawcett detailed an accomplishment of saving almost $1 million a year by not sending inmates out of the county. Fawcett detailed a redshirt program that allows potential jail employees to spend a month in a red shirt while their paperwork is handled and while they get a chance to see if being a jailer is for them. The program has allowed the county to keep inmates at the Ector County Detention Center rather than sending them out of the county, which is where the annual savings comes from. Fawcett also acknowledged his work with law enforcement has earned him the endorsement of Sheriff Mike Riffis. That, paired with higher wages at both the jail and with the deputies, is something Fawcett pointed to as a success. Mehta said officers don't want higher pay, but want a better quality of life. Fawcett said Ector County has more law enforcement on the streets than ever before. Quote, "I don't just say I back the blue, I do it," end quote. Fawcett touted $9.75 million coming to Ector County through federal grant programs. He also praised State Representative Brooks Landgraf helping the county with $17 million to help ease West Odessa's water woes. Fawcett said he drove Congressman August Pfluger around Ector County to point out issues, and Pfluger helped with a community funding project allocation of $700,000 for sheriff's deputy vehicles and equipment. Who's the better candidate? When asked what qualifies them over their opponent, they responded, Fawcett, quote, "I am a solution-oriented Republican. I don't believe in rhetoric. I believe in results." He said he doesn't need slogans, but plans. "We have executed for far too long. Ector County has been reactive and not proactive," and pointed to the county now having a master plan, as well as every department and elected official has a master plan. "During my tenure as judge, I have focused on what matters," end quote. Mehta said, quote, "I was a Marine for 20 years. I'm a husband, father, and citizen of Ector County, and I want to be the change. If I make a promise, I intend to see it through." On the courthouse, Fawcett defended the issuance of certificates of obligation, saying COs are a tool for large projects such as the Ector County Detention Center, the Juvenile Center, and the courthouse, which was a unanimous vote by the Commissioner's Court. Quote, "We did it for the citizens and for the hundreds of county employees who faced feces pouring on them in the courthouse. The issues with the current courthouse were massive. We did not look forward to doing it, and the buck had been passed on for too long." Mehta said he would not have jammed it down the throat of voters, and it was a knife in the back to me and other voters. He also said he couldn't find any reports of feces or water getting on employees. Fawcett shot back that he should speak to any employee of the courthouse about that. The Odessa American has reported on numerous instances of sewage leaks and other water leaks at the courthouse during the last 20 years. Emergency management. Mehta said during the recent icy weather, there was no plan for warming shelters for Ector County residents. Fawcett countered with what he called a wonderful team. Quote, "We have never seen this level of cooperation. The Red Cross, the Salvation Army, the city, and the food bank. Judge Sarah Kate Schock cooked for the shelters. We had warming shelters, and we even offered transportation to those who need to get to the warming shelters. We were fully prepared," end quote. Water and the lack of it. Mehta, who said he lives in West Odessa, said, "We can put a person to space, but can't get water in a timely manner," and said the county should look for chances to use technology to pull water from the air. Fawcett said the Landgraf-acquired grant is a step in the right direction on water for Ector County residents, and that part of the money will fund a water master plan for the county, which will make the county eligible for other grants. Keith honored as the Chamber's Citizen of the Year. The story was written by Michael Bauer. When Austin Keith first learned about being named this year's Odessa Citizen of the Year, he was shocked. The Permian graduate who attended UTEP was honored for his civic leadership and industry advocacy in the Permian Basin at this year's Citizen of the Year ceremony Thursday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Quote, "Well, it means a lot," Keith said. "I'm humbled more than anything else. But as I reflect back on the citizens that have been honored in this position before, and for the future ones to come, it's all about faith, it's all about family, it's all about community, and that's what I think about being a citizen of Odessa," end quote. Keith is the owner and president of Pinkies Incorporated, a 23-store beverage alcohol chain serving West Texas communities, including Odessa, Midland, Lubbock, and Amarillo. He graduated from Permian High School in 1973 and attended UTEP on a full scholarship for athletic training and sports medicine, earning his degree in education in 1977. Keith began his career in the beverage alcohol industry that same year with Lone Star Company, later joining Turk Distributing Company in 1980, where he worked until 1997. In 1998, he and his wife Michelle Keith purchased Pinkies Incorporated, which today employs approximately 180 people and includes various retail locations as well as Pinkies Barbecue in Lubbock. Throughout his career, Keith has remained deeply committed to civic leadership and industry advocacy. He currently serves as the state president of the Texas Package Stores Association and is the president-elect of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, known as MOTRAN Incorporated. His extensive history of service includes 16 years with the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center Board of Directors, serving as past president, as well as serving as chairman of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. Quote, "I think the chamber is a vital part of our community," Keith said. "They're the ones that keep us informed of what's going on, whether it's on the state level, the national level, or just in our community. And so I think we've got the best chamber of commerce in the whole nation," end quote. Keith has also shared his time and expertise with Meals on Wheels of Odessa and the United Way. He talked about why it's important to stay involved in the community. Quote, "I think that's a big thing in community," Keith said. "I think about service and stewardship. We're not only called with our talents, but we're called with our monetary things to give and support our institutions that are around in our community, and it's a big thing. I like serving. I mean, I think that's what the Lord calls us to do," end quote. Throughout his career, Keith has been recognized through numerous honors, including the Burt Ford Commendation from the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission and being named a Market Watch industry leader. His recent accolades include the 2024 John Durenbos Lifetime Achievement Award from UTEP and recognition from Odessa College in 2025. Keith is also a current board member of the Ella Noel Art Museum, where he served as campaign chair for the recent expansion and renovation. Quote, "Each year, we receive nominations from the community, and our community is full of wonderful people who do so many good things," Odessa Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Renee Earls said. But Austin Keith is the epitome of a proud Odessan, someone who is committed, someone who has not only had a very successful business through the years, but also gives of himself, his time, and his treasure, and just has his fingerprints on so many community projects. So we're so honored to celebrate him today. End quote. Keith wasn't the only one being honored at Thursday's ceremony. This year, the Odessa Chamber introduced the Friend to Odessa Award, which was awarded to Lisa Noel Wagner for her contributions to the community. Wagner is currently the board president of the Ellen Noel Art Museum, as well as the Museum of the Southwest and the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Quote, "She not only gives her time to organizations here in Odessa, but she gives her treasure. And she does it with many organizations. She grew up here. She continues to invest in her community, and we just thought, for the inaugural Friend of Odessa, she was the perfect recipient. It's an award that will only be given out on special occasions, and we're so thrilled that she is allowing us to have her as our first honoree." End quote. Hendrick Odessa Prevail Over TGAA. The story was written by Kim Smith. The TGAA is no longer appealing an Ector County District Court ruling that its contract with the City of Odessa is void and unenforceable. Lawyers for the Texas Government Accountability Association filed a notice of withdrawal of appeal in the 11th Court of Appeals in Eastland on Thursday. The attorneys don't explain the reason. According to the document, the TGAA, quote, "no longer desires to appeal Judge Lori Ruiz Crutcher's December 10, 2025 decision." On April 23, 2024, the Odessa City Council, which then included Mayor Javier Hoven, unanimously gave then-City Manager John Beckmeyer permission to sign a contract with TGAA, which promised to help the city become more transparent and to hold the city's feet to the fire if they violated any of TGAA's tenets. City Council members Steve Thompson and Gilbert Vasquez later expressed regret for their vote, saying they did not realize Beckmeyer had a long-term relationship with Matt Armstrong, who emails show helped negotiate the interlocal agreement between the city and TGAA, and who was also helping out on the re-election campaigns of Mayor Javier Hoven and council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata. When Hoven, Swanner, and Mata lost their seats in November 2024, the new council immediately voted to repudiate the contract. Mayor Cal Hendrick and new council members Eddie Mitchell and Craig Stoker had expressed grave concerns over the terms of the contract while campaigning. The contract did not have an end date, and while the first year of the contract was supposed to be free, after 5 years, the 20-cent rate per resident fee, or $24,000 annually, could increase, and there was no limit on that increase. In addition, the contract stated the only way the city could terminate the contract was by holding an election at taxpayers' expense for citizens to determine its fate. Moreover, the contract stated that even if citizens voted to kill the contract, the city would have had to pay for 2 more years. On February 7th, TGAA went to the American Arbitration Association in Dallas County, seeking arbitration to stop the city from ending the contract and to get $10,000 and attorney's fees. The city responded by going to Ruiz Crutcher to declare the contract unconstitutional, void, and unenforceable. The city filed a motion for a partial summary judgment in September, again arguing the contract is illegal and unconstitutional. Moreover, they argued in the motion TGAA isn't a governmental entity, is privately funded by people or entities they have refused to name. Hendrick has repeatedly said a private nonprofit entity in Dallas can't strip away the rights of Odessa's citizens to self-rule under the guise of transparency and ethics. He said TGAA said they were in favor of transparency, but hid from the court and the public the identities of those funding them. Quote, "This was about control. The TGAA sought to control the citizen of Odessa and its leadership to decisions made behind closed doors by TGAA's Dallas-based arbitrators," Hendrick said via email following the December ruling. Quote, "The court today stood up for the rights of the citizens of Odessa and rightfully found that the TGAA document cannot stand." End quote.
This is the Dear Abby column. Pair of revelations turn spouse's world upside down. Dear Abby, my husband and I, both male, have been together for 28 years. The last few years have been less than romantic, but we remain close and in love, or so I thought. A few days ago, he called me from work. I'm retired, crying so hard I could hardly understand him. I rushed to his office, and he told me he had just learned from his doctor that he has AIDS. He then confessed that he'd had an affair with a contractor at his place of employment. He said it happened years ago when we were going through a rough patch, and swore it was the only time he had strayed. I am awaiting the results of my HIV test, heartbroken and crushed. What now? I'm so hurt. I don't know if I should stay or go. Signed, Crushed in Florida. Dear Crushed, your first order of business should be to ensure you and your husband are getting the best medical advice and treatment possible. A diagnosis of HIV positive does not necessarily mean the disease will progress to full-blown AIDS, because with advances in medication, it can be held in check. Whether you should stay with your husband or leave is a question that should be tabled until you are less traumatized and thinking rationally. Dear Abby, two of my children are planning weddings 2 months apart next year. I'm originally from the Netherlands, where my entire family still lives. My kids both want to invite these relatives, which is great, except my parents are 86 and 87, and can make it to only one wedding. For my sisters, nieces, and nephews, it's too costly to come to both. They don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, and I have no idea how to advise them about which wedding to attend. My son said he will help them financially if they need it, so that they can come to both. But even so, I know it would not be possible for my parents to come to both. Any advice? Signed, Challenged in Idaho. Dear Challenged, I do have one suggestion. Step back. It should not be your responsibility to orchestrate who will attend which wedding. Invitations should be sent to everyone. After that, I'm sure conversations will ensue. If financial help is needed, your son is offering it. Should your parents' degree of infirmity prevent them from attending both celebrations, the decision about which they will attend should be theirs. Even if they can't be there in person for both, these days many weddings are live-streamed, and photos and videos can be shared on social media. To my Asian readers who celebrate the Lunar New Year. The Lunar New Year begins today. This is the year of the horse. According to Asian culture, individuals born in the year of the horse are dynamic, charming, and adventurous. They thrive in settings that are bustling with activity and are often seen as natural leaders and motivators. A healthy, happy, and prosperous New Year to you all. Tally ho. Love, Abby. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.